Welcome to the Connect Community Podcast, recorded live in Stamford, Connecticut. We're so glad to have you with us today. If you're ever in our area, come see us in person. We hope today's message inspires you and helps you live better.
We're closing our series today. There has been five parts. Well, this is the fifth part of this series, From Death to Life. We started at the beginning of the month of March, and today is the last day of March. Can you believe it? Tomorrow is April. And we are closing this series titled From Death to Life. And today's message title, if you're taking notes, is Death is Temporary. Death is Temporary. My wife and I grew up involved in church. That's how we met as kids. And about 33 years ago is when we met first. And then we disconnected, and then we met again as teens about 24 years ago. In the year 2000, Y2K, everybody out there who went through that, it wasn't as hard as they made it sound. We got married. When we got married, really young, and I'm not going to say our age because that would be indelicate, but I'm just going to say that one of us was 19. One of us was, and we were young, and we moved to Texas shortly after we got married. 15 months after, and that's where I became an American, because both my wife and I are Brazilian born, but Eleni was raised in Connecticut. Some of you might not know that. She was raised here in Connecticut, but Texas was my first American experience, and I loved it. You can become an American anywhere in the country, but there's nothing like becoming an American in Texas. I gotta tell you, you know, if there's one thing that Texans love more than being an American, it's being a Texan. That's the only thing they love more. And we loved our time there. You know, you don't listen to the naysayers and the headlines and the stereotypes. We lived in Houston for over a decade, and it was a lovely place filled with lovely people. And sometimes you have to be lovely because everybody's armed. But no, I'm kidding. I'm kidding. We built a life there, and we made lifelong friends there. We bought property there, and we envisioned our future there. We thought we were going to retire there, that we're going to live there forever. And we never thought of leaving. In fact, in all the years that we spent there, I do not recall ever hearing anyone say, I got to get out of here. You know how sometimes people say, man, I got to go experience some other part of the country. I got to get out of here. We never heard that in Texas, ever. It was surprising when I started hearing that after we moved here. But so we embraced that, Texas for life. You know, we're going to live here. We're going to stay here, raise our kids here, and melt here because it's so hot. But it's okay. We will endure it. We made a community there. We made a life there. But sometime in 2012, we started feeling a call to come to New England. We would come here for visits from time to time and spend some time in New York City. And we always enjoyed that time. But we didn't know what that meant at the time. This call to come to New England. And so we started praying and seeking God. And as we considered such a move, we understood this, that for that move to happen, all the vision, all the dreams we had of building our life in Texas, all the future that we had planned and that we had envisioned, they had to die. Those things had to die. They had to be buried. And I think one of the greatest challenges for anyone when you come to your own, when you begin to develop a vision for your life in your early years, is not only the work that it is required for you to accomplish that vision, but it's the things that you have to give up to accomplish that vision. Come on, most of us here understand that. Most of you here, if not all of us here, know that. Getting a college degree, for example, it's not only the amount of work that you have to put into it, it's all the things that you have to say no to that count in the cost for you to succeed in those classes that challenge you. If you've ever started a business, you know this. The finances alone are enough for you to understand what it means to let go of things, because your budget is controlled to the cent. You have to save everything. You have to say no to a lot of your comforts in order for you to get that business started. Move into a new city. Many of us here, we are not from Stanford, born and raised. And we came here by different means. And you know what it means to leave a place that you belong to. Relationships, history, all the things, the potential future, all of that. You had to walk away from that. Same thing with changing careers. You have experience in one career, you have know-how, you have rapport, you have the title, you have that those comforts, but if you're going to change, you're going to start from scratch, you're going to have to give all of that up. Those things will have to die. And sometimes the sacrifice is more painful, the sacrifice is more scary, more daunting than the work itself, than the commitment itself. And even this word sacrifice tends to get overlooked. Because sacrifice means to intentionally kill one thing for the benefit of another. That's what sacrifice is. Every time you sacrifice, you're killing one thing for the benefit of another. It's the implication. Sacrifice implies death. And I don't know if you've been in that position. Have you been in that position? Where you've had to sacrifice something valuable, something that you liked, something that you loved, something that you even wanted, but you gave that up in order to achieve a goal or a vision. You know, it was Thursday evening, the night before Good Friday. Jesus had dinner with his disciples one last time. And after dinner, he went to pray in the same place that he had prayed many times before. So the disciples thought, this is business as usual. We ate together. Jesus is going to go on one of his long prayers and we got to be with him. So we're going to take a nap. And that's what they did. They went to sleep as Jesus agonized over what was about to happen. But then they heard a commotion that told them that this night was a different night. It was one of their own who was not with them. Judas was coming toward Jesus with the mob of soldiers and indignant citizens. And they had clubs and swords. And they came to capture Jesus before Passover. And then Judas approached Jesus and with a kiss, he betrayed him. And when other disciples saw that Jesus surrendered, when they saw that the mob caught Jesus, they ran away because Jesus was seized. Jesus was taken into custody. He stood before the authorities in the middle of the night in a makeshift trial as they pressed him from every angle, looking for a reason, looking for a reason, true or not, to put him to death. That was their plan. They were never going to acquit him. It wasn't a real trial. They were never going to release him. The plan was to get rid of him. He was a stumbling block in their way. And this was the moment of truth for the disciples, for those who were following Jesus. Was Jesus really who he said he was? Was he the Son of God? Because if he was the Son of God, there's no chance that humans could kill him, right? If he was the Son of God, there's no chance that God would let his very own son suffer at the hands of unjust man for unjust reasons. You know, some scholars believe that that's why Judas betrayed Jesus. Some scholars believe that Judas's motivation was not greed. In fact, it was not rebellion. It wasn't even hate. It was impatience. They believe that Judas tried to manipulate the situation, manipulate Jesus, so that Jesus would rise to a place of power. Because if they pit the powers that be against Jesus, Jesus would defeat them. And he would become the hopeful king that the Jews wanted. They would come out on top. And since Judas took care of the money, that would be good for him too. It is impossible to know Judas's intentions. We can't know this for sure, but it's a plausible idea because as much as Jesus warned his followers that those in power were coming for him, defeat was inconceivable. There's no way that Jesus would be defeated. But with every step that night, things kept getting worse. It didn't get better. It got worse. Jesus was standing before the high priest Caiaphas in a room filled with scribes and the council of elders and the chief priests. And these people had the power to condemn. They had legal power to condemn someone to death. And they were seeking for a false testimony. They were seeking for a reason to kill him. And after several witnesses came forward with false accusations, they didn't find anything punishable by death until this happened. Matthew chapter 26, verse 61. This man said, somebody said, I am able to destroy the temple of God and to rebuild it in 3 days. He's claiming Jesus said that. And the high priest stood up and said, have you no answer to make? He's talking to Jesus. What is it that these men testify against you? But Jesus remained silent. And the high priest said to him, I adjure you by the living God, tell us if you are the Christ, the Son of God. And Jesus said to him, you have said so, but I tell you, from now on you will see the Son of Man seated at the right hand of power and coming on the clouds of heaven. Then the high priest tore his robes and said, he has uttered blasphemy. What further witness do we need? You have now heard this blasphemy. What is your judgment? So the room immediately, everybody who wanted him dead said, he deserves death. He deserves death. And they started to spit on him, to strike his face, to slap his face. And I can't imagine the disciples who were not allowed in the room but were outside trying to ascertain what's happening. They were likely thinking, anytime now Jesus is going to break free. Anytime now he's going to put them in their place. Anytime now, because at every encounter, that's what Jesus did. Every encounter he had with these teachers, with these same people, whenever they pressed him with a legal matter, he left them silent. He always knew a way out. He always had the answer. Plus, he had miracle power. He healed the blind, the lame, the lepers. He has multiplied bread. He has walked on water. Anytime now, Jesus is going to break those chains. Anytime now, he's going to set himself free. But it didn't get better. It got worse. On that night, they bound Jesus like a criminal. And they took him to the governor's quarters. And as they left with him on the streets, when Judas saw that they had bound Jesus like a condemned criminal, he knew what was about to happen. See, he knew their plan. He knew what he had facilitated, and he tried to undo it. He went back to the chief priests, and he took his money back, and he said, hey, listen, this is innocent blood money. I can't keep this. I have betrayed innocent blood. You guys have to undo this. And they said, what's that to us? It's too late. That's on you now. That's not our problem. So Judas threw the money, 30 pieces of silver, onto the temple, and walked out in bitter agony and took his own life, according to the scriptures. Now, when Jesus got to Pilate, the governor, Pilate was concerned with only one thing. Is he an insurrectionist? Is he trying to set up his own government? Is he trying to rise to power and overthrow the empire, the power of the empire? That was his only concern. Has he declared himself king of the Jews, as they claim? So he asked Jesus about it. And according to John, Jesus said, my kingdom is not of this world. That's why my people are not fighting. That's why they're not resisting. And so Pilate, as a governor, thought, there's nothing that I can condemn him on. He hasn't broken any of our laws. I'm going to release him. But the people demanded his life. Instigated by the religious leaders, instigated by those who were in power, they condemned him and they asked for his crucifixion. Still, Jesus did nothing. He didn't defend himself. He didn't complain. And I imagine the disciples puzzled, still hoping, still praying that the worst would not happen, that something would stop this injustice. But Jesus kept silent. You know, when Pilate ordered the execution, the soldiers, the Roman soldiers, they were in charge and they were had the authority to carry the execution. It was a brutal execution because in those days, an insurrectionist suffered the worst kind of punishment. And so the soldiers continued to mock him. They beat him. They fashioned a crown of thorns. And with the reed, they strike his head. And the crown of thorns pierced his head into his skull. They flogged him. They flogged him with a whip so brutal that the leather strips had pieces of bone and nails and metal at the end. It was designed to hit the back and get stuck to the back. And with every pull, it would pull pieces of skin out of his back. And still, he didn't curse them. He didn't complain. He suffered. Jesus felt the pain. He didn't defend himself. They put a cross on him and carried his cross to Calvary. Along the way, some speculate that he was suffering so much that they asked somebody else to help, but Jesus carried his cross to Calvary, and on that cross they lay him. And they put nails on each of his hands, on his wrists, and through his feet. And they lifted that cross. And there he hung at 9 o'clock in the morning. And every step of the way, I believe the disciples were hoping that Jesus was going to come out of it. How could he not? How could all the things that we experienced together be for nothing? How could he die? In fact, we know that they were hoping because at one point they thought Jesus was calling on the prophet Elijah. In the scripture, Mark chapter 15, it says this, verse 33. And when the sixth hour had come, that's noon, 3 hours later, there was darkness over the whole land until the ninth hour, that's 3 p.m. in the afternoon. And at the ninth hour, at 3 p.m. in the afternoon, Jesus cried out with a loud voice, Eloi, Eloi, lema sabachthani, which means, my God, why have you forsaken me? And some of the bystanders hearing it said, behold, he's calling Elijah, because Eloi sounds like Elijah in the Hebrew, in Aramaic. And some ran and filled a sponge with sour wine and put it on a reed to give him for him to drink, saying, wait, wait, let us see whether Elijah will come to take him down. And Jesus uttered a loud cry, which another disciple says he cried, it is finished, and breathed his last. And there he died. But until the very last moment, they said, wait, something is going to happen. There's no way that the Son of God can die. He's calling Elijah. Let's see if Elijah will come. There was hope until the very last minute. See, Elijah was the prophet who said Christ would come. He's called the evangelist of the Old Testament. He was the one who said, prepare the way of the Lord. He was the one who believed to have not died, but he was taken up by chariots of fire. In fact, bypassing death was a sign of holiness. Moses was believed to have not died. Elijah was believed to have not died. So how could the Son of God have died? It doesn't make sense. They're dejected. They're sad. And I don't know, have you faced this dichotomy in your life? Have you faced this kind of tension in your life? Have you grappled with this tension? Maybe you're here today, this morning, and you're not a church person. You were brought here. Somebody dragged you here, promised you brunch. And you're here all hungry, hoping for tacos. Maybe you're waiting for the egg hunt, and kind of watching your clock. Oh, I'm going to finish in a moment. We're going to get there. But have you ever wrestled with the idea that good things shouldn't die? That good things shouldn't end? For those of you who are used to church language, have you ever held on to the notion that that which is God-ordained, that which is blessed by God cannot die? It can't end. Many of us, we carry this false idea. And there's two ways that we face this in life. The first way is that we don't see it coming. We're living life, we're going through our disappointments and circumstances, and we don't see it coming. And this is where much of our disappointment comes from, right? The marriage that seemed God ordained now is as good as dead. You haven't called it quits yet, but if you had the courage, you would. The business, the career, the life you envisioned, you thought it was from God. The good kind of life is dead. And the initial response is very similar to those watching Jesus. How could this happen? You believed against all odds until the last minute that something would save you, something would get you out of that situation, that you would see a salvation. You prayed, you asked, you hoped that God would save that thing you prized. And when it didn't happen, when it died, it's almost like your faith died with it. Like, how can you believe a God that would allow for good things to die? Maybe you've suffered loss in your life, and it's too great. And your faith died with it. There's no way that God would allow that. There's no way that a good God would allow that. You know, the second way that we face this is when we do see it coming. And that doesn't make it any better. You know, it's when in the middle of a pursuit, you are asked, and I'm using asked liberally here, you are quote-unquote asked to sacrifice, right? Like when you are asked to leave your job, or it happens, or when you are asked to move because of the pandemic, you had to do it, or when you're asked to change your life because of a surprise pregnancy. See, sometimes you have to make tough decisions that will forever change your future, forever change your circumstances. And several of us here today, you're here because of that. You had to make those tough choices. You had to face such circumstances. See, I was convinced that God sent me to Texas, and I believe He did. But I was also convinced that it was for life. But when we received the vision, when we had the inspiration to build a community here in Connecticut through the local church, our plans and dreams to build our life in Texas, they had to die. We had to let go of that. We had to kill it on purpose. And you know how hard that is? Some of you know exactly how hard that is. But you also know how necessary it is, because it's the only way forward if we're going to answer the call. What's my point? My point is that part of the lesson of the cross is that sometimes good things need to die. Because what God is doing is bigger than what we can perceive. See, Jesus didn't come to bypass death. He came to conquer death. He came to conquer the grave. And that's why today is a day for celebration. Because the young man that showed up in the tomb and talked to Mary and Martha, according to Mark chapter 16, 6, he said this: "Do not be alarmed. You seek Jesus of Nazareth, who was crucified. He has risen. He is not here. See the place where they laid him." See, today is not only the day we celebrate Jesus resurrected, but today is the day that we are reminded that the same power that rose Christ Jesus from the dead lives in each and every one of us. That power lives in us. And it's not only empowerment to live eternity with God, it's not only until for after we're gone from this world, but it's for us to participate in the renewal of all things. even as we live our lives. And let me encourage you today that the trials and circumstances that you were facing, that you have faced, they have been faced by many people of faith who put their faith in God and did the right thing. Jesus himself lost his life doing the right thing. He was beaten, he was bruised, he was rejected, but he did it for our sake. Let the life of Christ encourage you today, like it did the early Christians. Hebrews chapter 12, verse 1 and 2 say this: therefore, since we are surrounded by so great a cloud of witnesses, let us also lay aside every weight and every sin that clings so closely, and let us run with endurance the race that is set before us. Listen to this. Look into Jesus, the founder and perfecter of our faith, who for the joy that was set before him endured the cross, despising the shame, and is seated at the right hand of the throne of God. For the joy that was set before him endured the cross. And personally, this means some things for your life. It means a few things to you and I. It means that some things will need to be sacrificed. It means that in your life, there will come points and seasons where things will have to die. But that doesn't mean you failed. It doesn't mean you failed, because for those who are in Christ, death is temporary. Death is not permanent. Death is not final. Sometimes your marriage needs to die. And I'm not talking about divorce. I'm talking about renewal. It has to come to nothing so that God can build it new. Sometimes your career needs to die. You know, you walked the wrong path and it was taking you on the wrong direction, and you're getting greedy, and your mind is, you're switching your priorities, and God is bringing you back to something greater for you. Sometimes your plans need to die. And God may ask you to sacrifice them. You know, when we left Texas, it was hard. Leaving friends, it was hard. Leaving family, it was hard. Selling our new home that we had just purchased, it was hard. Leaving our church, that was really, really hard. And the idea that we were going to bring our 2-year-old daughter at the time and extract her from the place of her birth, And change her entire future without her knowledge, without her even knowing. And it could all be a bust. It could all be for nothing. Lose everything. Because that's what it's required when you do something like that. Everything. I got to tell you, the first years were really, really hard. You know, we spent all of our savings. The profit we made on the house, gone. It was hard to make friends. It was hard to start from nothing. All we had was a vision, a calling. And we went all in. We put all our eggs in one basket. You shouldn't do that, they say. Except later tonight, like the kids need to put up their eggs. Get it? Like, sacrificing was hard. And some of you have been there. You have cried tears that nobody around you even knows. Because you've been asked to give up something that's so valuable, and you didn't know where it was going to lead. Maybe you're there right now. You're in the between. You're in a moment of loss. And I just wanted to share with you, it's been 10 years since we moved. And 10 years later, no, we don't take credit for anything that has happened here. But look around. God has built a beautiful community. And I can stand here today and tell you that he has worked all things together for good in our lives. And he can do the same for you. There's a community of people here. God's vision is coming true. God has blessed us personally. We've made lifelong friends here now. We're able to rebuild. And today, for the first time in our lives, Eleni and I were talking about this. It's very interesting because, you know, when we got married, we had this view of we're gonna experience the world. There's so much ahead of us. And there was no sense of longevity anywhere we were. Even in Texas, even though we thought about the future, It's the first time in our lives in recent years where we've felt like, okay, there's longevity here. We can see ourselves here, actually. God has given us peace, a place to live, a healthy family, to love and to grow. He has blessed our ministry, our life. He has blessed my wife's career in the marketplace. And like Alini and me, some of you, you've had to bury old dreams. You've had to let go of old dreams. And maybe you found yourself having to move here and it wasn't your first choice. It wasn't in your plans. Maybe you had an event happen in your life that changed everything. Maybe you had to say goodbye to a loved one and that was hard. And it changed everything. Maybe it was a diagnosis, an accident, a loss, something physical that happened to you, a challenge along the way that changed your future. Maybe you had to go through a divorce and that was difficult because you envisioned yourself not having to go through that. You had to bury that part of your dream, that part of your life. See, one thing that we can't just overlook is the fact that grief comes when things die. Whether the story is positive or negative, grief comes when things die. Even if you sacrifice them by faith for something better, grief comes when things die. Some of you, you had to move here because of the pandemic. And your life is blessed. You're better for it. But it was painful to leave. The people you left behind, the relationships you left. Some of you, you're here because of something good. Something good happened. Maybe a job, a promotion, you were invited to move here and life was looking up, but still you had to leave things behind. There's grief in that. There's difficulty in that. Or maybe, like we said before, it wasn't fair. It wasn't planned. There was pain and loss. It was hard to bear. I want to challenge you today. Wherever you might find yourself, I want to challenge you to dream again, to believe again, to put your faith in God again, to renew your faith if your faith has died because of a circumstance. Today's Resurrection Sunday, we serve a God who can bring things back to life. We serve a God where things that have died do not stay dead, but they can rise again. And that's the message of today. Understand that what we call sacrifice, when we are called to sacrifice, we do it like Jesus. For the joy that is set before Him, He endured the cross. There is joy on the other side. There's joy on the other side. Friends, death is temporary. We have the resurrection power on the inside of us. And all of this is possible because He is risen. Do you receive it this morning? Amen. Amen.
Thank you for listening today. If you have a prayer request, a question about faith, or would like to find out more information, visit us at connectcommunity.org. Don't forget to subscribe and share. See you next time.